Hello, Autism Warrior, and welcome to Barefoot Autism Warriors podcast. I'm Ninka Bernadette Mauritsen, and I am here to tell you that autism is a consciousness test, it's a wake-up call, and it's your chance to turn your life around. And when you do, everything changes. So this is a vulnerable podcast episode again. And I really want you to stick to the end because I have a bonus surprise guest for you. My son is also going to give you his input on this tricky subject. And the title for the podcast is Why Gluten Might Cause Personality Disorders for Your Child. And I really hope you'll enjoy this podcast. It's a tricky subject, and I'll take you through all the different ways that gluten destroys your child's behavior, cognitive abilities, health, and skills, and what happens when my son cheats with gluten and why it happens, the addictive aspects of gluten, the inflammatory aspects of gluten, the spiritual aspects of the war on our children through food. This is a really interesting podcast episode, and I really hope you'll enjoy it. Stick to the end to hear my son's input as well. And if you want the links and descriptions and extra podcasts and get access to the podcast that I'm mentioning on this episode or in this episode, go to barefootautismwarriors.com/podcasts/133 for this episode. Enjoy. Ooh, this topic is not something I love talking about. It's not something I'm proud of. It's something that we still sometimes struggle with. One of the few things that we're still struggling with sometimes after my son's recovery. And it's one of the few things that can cause problems for my child that is almost like regression. If I were to describe it, I would call it regression. We're going to talk about gluten and how it changes personality in our children to a scary, scary degree, and why I think we are still struggling with it, and how you can make sure that you prevent this from happening in your child and in your life. And if you haven't excluded gluten from the diet yet, and if you're wondering whether it's worth it, I think that this podcast episode will provide you with some facts and details and some future perspectives that will change that for you. So let's just get straight into the difficult part of this topic, and that is the way that my son behaves when he has gluten. The last time I noticed that he'd had it, sometimes he has it accidentally, sometimes he just has it because he cannot stop himself. And I want to talk about the addictive part of this incredibly just unuseful, shitty food. But let's just get to this last time that I noticed this in my child. Now, me and his brother, we know all the signs, and we have had to have control over his financial situation sometimes when it comes to this, because of his inability to impulse control this one only aspect in his life. He doesn't drink, he doesn't party, he doesn't game, he eats healthy food, he works out. But this is something that is really hard for him to control. And so we noticed, we had guests the other day, and we went out to eat, and my son was having a lot of conversations with this guest. And that's positive. He is extremely communicative. And from someone who used to be nonverbal or only doing scripting or echolalia, saying the same word over and over and over again, it's huge that he has in-depth conversations, that he's asking questions, that he's super curious, that he really looked forward to meeting this person. And he spoke and talked all night. But there was this little tiny, you know the signs? Let me share the signs with you so that you can keep an eye on them when it comes to your child, maybe, or your adult, young adult. Because guess what? I believe, or I know, and I have seen and witnessed this over the past 15 years, some foods can literally cause something that is very close to a personality disorder. And when our children are in full-blown autism before the recovery, what they do, if you look at it from the outside, it looks like a mental breakdown. Spinning, screaming, tantrums, flapping, lining things up, eloping, putting themselves in dangerous situations, lack of emotional control, and all those extreme symptoms. And when he has gluten, my recovered son is nothing like that, but it changes him 100%. He is not the same person. And here are some of the signs, and they are scary. They are scary when it happens. I'm scared because I don't want him to go through life in that state. The pupils get dilated. So you'll see huge black pupils in the eyes. So it almost looks like this person is under influence of something. And that's actually exactly what happens. And I'll get to that in a second. Then there is this sudden lack of social cues and understanding social interaction, so that he will then be talking more than he'll be listening, or he'll say strange things, and it's then all of a sudden it seems like he is not picking up the clues, he's not engaging in a conversational way that makes sense. So that the conversation is a little bit off. So this affects social skills. It affects the ability to make good decisions, because impulse control, spatial awareness is limited. In traffic, it is also affecting his ability to predict situations. And then he loses his incredibly big heart and his empathy and his deep understanding, emotional intelligence, his understanding of us, his ability to put himself in our shoes, which is something that he's really good at. When he doesn't eat gluten, he can understand when we're sad and why we're sad, and he can be unselfish. He speaks to us in a very loving and kind way. And we were talking about this, me and his brother, how amazing of a person he is when he does not touch it, doesn't have an inch or a spoonful of gluten ever. And when he does, it's a question of between 5 to maybe 8 days, sometimes a bit longer, and then we have a completely different person living with us under this roof. And that is painful in many different aspects. It's painful because we are worried about the lack of decision making when it comes to choosing not to do it when there's money available. It can work well for a month or 2 months, but then it's really, really hard for him to not go and have a piece of bread. And it's hard because for my youngest son, his patience with that type of behavior is limited. He's incredibly giving, and he has been taking over the role of fathering in many ways since he was around 14 and we had this divorce. I've tried to avoid it, and his father has too, but he's extremely responsible and he's overprotective when it comes to his brother. But he also, of course, thinks, okay, I don't particularly love having to check the account every day to make sure that nothing bad is bought, and that he sticks on the narrow path and eats his own healthy foods or our foods or gluten or dairy-free versions of it. And it's painful because the person that you love and connect with and adore your brother, in my case, my son, the bonding, the experiences that we have, the connection that we have, the communication that we have, all of a sudden it's gone. And I would say that I understand what it feels like when someone is living with someone who's got dementia in that situation, or with someone who's got a problem with controlling alcohol or whatever it is, where the personality changes. It changes. And these kids, they cannot be blamed for this addiction to those responses in the brain that happens when we eat gluten. And another reason why I wanted to talk about this is, imagine being labeled with a personality disorder, or with autism, or with ADHD, or with learning difficulties, if the real cause for this type of behavior is nutritional. And imagine we have actually a whole system of diagnosing and dealing with and treating these kids that almost across the board ignores the nutritional aspects of this behavior and these behavior changes and these cognitive abilities or limitations that we can fix with food and diet. So why is it that this is addictive, and why is it that I'm extremely hardcore when it comes to really, really recommending to you that your child does not get in touch with or is not put in situations without monitoring during childhood or teenage years, that they don't get as much as a crouton or a piece of bread or anything with gluten in it? Why am I so strict with this? The one major thing is that it's got an opioid effect in the body, meaning that when you ingest gluten, the many, many difficulties that these children have with leaky gut and with permeability in the gut lining, the immune system responding to partially digested, or to proteins that are only partially broken down, because none of us really have the enzyme to fully break down gluten. So no matter what, no matter if you're celiac or non-celiac, whether the food intolerance will show up in tests or not, whether you see immediate reactions in the gut or anything like that, all of us have an immune response to gluten, because none of us have the enzyme to fully break down gluten. This is something that Alessandro Fasano has studied intensively, and he's a gastroenterologist, and he's an incredibly knowledgeable man when it comes to gluten and its damaging effects. So the opioid effect is what I believe drives these children and young adults to go and eat this, even though they know before they do it how problematic it is. Even though there are great gluten-free alternatives, they're actually seeking this high. And this opioid effect can either be stimulating, or it can be calming, like heroin is, or speed is to in the system, in the body. It's the same type of effect. And this is not recognized. And I think it's really, really important to recognize, because it can impair these children's ability to live a normal life that they can live if there's a sort of controlled environment where they don't have access to gluten, just like you would not let someone who has an addictive reaction to any other brain-affecting drug, you wouldn't let them near those things. So why is this extra problematic with these children that are living an independent life? Like, my child is fully independent. He can work, he can make his own money, he can make his own food. He doesn't have to live with me. Except when he has gluten, he really does need supervision. And so why is this extra tricky? It's extra tricky because he understands before he eats gluten, but the minute gluten enters into the body, here's what happens. We already talked about the opioid effect. That's one thing. But there are many other damaging and very serious side effects to gluten in our children's lives. One is that the immune system that attacks own tissue because it doesn't recognize gluten as food, it just looks at it and thinks, what is this? It's not food. It's not our own tissue. It's something we don't recognize. We're gonna attack this with everything that we've got. So it becomes a broad spectrum attack from the immune system that is like child soldiers or teen soldiers gone completely crazy in some war-ridden country. So the immune system will start firing at everything and anything, including own tissue. And the problematic thing with gluten is that that also happens in the brain. So there are mechanisms that are so complicated to explain, so I'll try to just say it as simply as possible. When someone has gluten that has this and has this immune attack where the body, but the immune system actually breaks down your own cells because it just fires on anything. And so the immune system starts to break down the tissue. But that also happens in the cerebellum, which is the junction box between brain and body that will that impacts emotional control, impacts learning, impacts speech, impacts decision-making, social skills. All the things that we need to function in a normal adult world is something that the brain needs to do in the cerebellum. And if you break down brain cells inside the cerebellum, you're in big trouble. And I think it's Tom O'Brien who's done some studies on that, how ingesting gluten can actually break down brain tissue. So that's point number two, reason number two why gluten is such a toxic food for our children. Third reason is that it also causes inflammation. Inflammation all over the body, but also inflammation in the brain. So we've got a situation where there's addiction, there is an opioid effect that affects the many cognitive and emotional and behavioral and learning capabilities in our children. We have the immune system on full alarm, firing on all cylinders, attacking everything, own tissue, and often the weakest link. So I'm not saying it's necessarily the brain, but it's very likely the brain too, because the immune system will go and attack the weakest link, or it will be affecting the weakest link in the body. So if your child has a lot of gut issues, it might be breaking down tissue inside the gut and leading to chronic digestive disorders like Crohn's and celiac disease. If the weakest link is in skin or maybe joints, it might lead to pain or arthritis or skin problems or skin issues. But let's say the brain is the weakest link. Let's say the brain is where the body is most challenged. Well, then that will be where the immune system will hit the hardest, or where you will see the most damaging effects. So, you know, it would have been a greater punchline or a nicer podcast for me to record if I could say that this is something that I definitely have solved in my own life. And I can just say that I haven't yet solved it completely, because it's a question of full financial freedom versus me and Melvin still having supervision and monitoring, and him practicing making these decisions without us checking all the time. And as so far, we've only managed months without it. And then if we forget to check, he'll notice and he'll go back and do it. So for now, we have to control the outcome. And that's the only bad thing that he spends money on. And I know that God is teaching me something through this. And I know that there's so much to be grateful for, because my son is not partying. He doesn't drink. He doesn't go out. He doesn't do gaming. He doesn't do any other stupid things. So there's so much to be grateful for, and he has come so far. And when he does not have gluten, he's an incredible person. An incredible person, and nothing. So you wouldn't sit and have a conversation with him and think, wow, he used to be stimming, eloping, screaming, rigid, lining things up, risky behavior, throwing himself off balconies, and all those things, that the screaming, the yelling, the spinning, all the things that's gone. And that is something we got to remember, to celebrate the massive wins, and also remember that there will always be more to work on. Within the last 7 years, what he has achieved is passing college, coming into college in a different foreign country, different new language that he didn't even know, and he couldn't understand before moving here. Taking his driver's license, driving, being a friend, having friends, having a job, work. And so he's doing really, really well. And he just needs that tiny little push. Actually, for example, one other thing that's been developing over the past 7 years is such emotional intelligence, where he can analyze his father's and my skills as parents or partners, and humor, and being able to laugh at himself, like not taking himself seriously at all. And these things are just so, so, so beautiful, as long as we still have a collaboration around the financial situation and access to money. So luckily, he's such a gentle soul, and he lets us help him in that way. So he does not resist that collaboration, which some would call supervision, others would call interference. But it's literally the second that this stuff gets into the system, the personality changes so much that what he knows before eating it about how bad it is for him, and the person that can make that decision, make the good decisions, is no longer there. So meaning the more these children eat gluten, the less logical they are, the less empathic they'll get, the less decisions they are able to make that are good for them. And that's why it's so important to keep them completely away from it and not giving them access to money where they can buy it. He doesn't want to eat it. It's something that can't be controlled, and that is something that's due to that opioid effect. So now, what's our strategy now? Our strategy now is to get him to a point where he has had at least 1 year of nothing. Not an inch, not a drop, not a slice of gluten protein molecules that his body cannot break down, so that he gets back into top shape and really gets this lived experience in having a brain that works 100%, being able to have the conversations that we can only have when he doesn't eat this, being able to connect and understand people, being able to make great decisions. And so we are going to have a year of complete control, so that he feels this in a way that he doesn't make that initial decision to go and have it. And I know it sounds absurd to look at gluten as any other destructive drug or whatever you would call it, but that is actually the way that I look at it. That's how dangerous I feel that it is. And that's why I want to say to you, first of all, when you have a chance, when your child is a little child, don't give your children gluten. Don't give them junk food, but particularly do not give them gluten and soy and dairy. I wish I had known this when I was pregnant, because the reason why my oldest child has this issue is because I lived on a gluten diet all throughout my pregnancy. Pizza and toast and anything with gluten in it, I would have it. Cakes. And first of all, the body of a baby inside the mom will get used to, the receptors will get used to that stimulation. Whether you're eating a lot of sugar or whether you're eating a lot of gluten, and I did both, your child will be prone to go for those types of food because their receptors have been prone and prepared for that type of stimulants throughout the whole of their creation inside the womb. And that's one thing. And then he was 4 years old before he was diagnosed, and we changed his diet, and he didn't have any gluten for his whole childhood and most of his preteen and early teen years. Then unfortunately, we sent him to a school for young musicians where they lived at the school for a year. The first year we lived here in the UK, yet another bad idea about moving to the UK based on a shamanic guidance from someone called Pia the White Shaman. Anyway, but that he wasn't ready for being without our supervision back then. He was 16 and it was too early. And that's when it started. That's when it began for him. And since then, it's been really hard for him to stick to the gluten-free diet 100%. This is not that he's eating it a lot, but it will just be, he'll go and have one cake or one sandwich 1 week, and then the next 2 to 3 months are destroyed. They're ruined. So that was a bad decision. Do not give your child money to buy what they want. Do not slack and let them eat gluten when they are out or when they go to parties, and do not give your children gluten when they are growing up and when they are children. So my son had gluten when I was pregnant. He was built in a body that was built on gluten, so I had it before my pregnancy, during my pregnancy. His first meals were full of gluten, porridge, gluten-based porridge and meals and formula with dairy. And so when he was 4 years old, he was already hardwired to, in his receptors, to love and crave and be stimulated by these stimulating foods. So the last thing I want to say about this is also a spiritual war. This is the enemy, the darkness, the dark agenda, the hijacked field and matrices trying to destroy your child and your family. And I'll link to a podcast episode I recorded specifically about the autism matrix and how it's trying to destroy your child and your family. Because this is a spiritual warfare between good and evil and light and dark and between healing and destruction. So when autism happens in our lives, it's a wake-up call. It is us being put back on the narrow path where we live the way that God intended us to live, and we heal our children the way that God has prepared for us to heal our children, to create miracles and to create hope and to glorify Him through these recovery stories. And the enemy knows this. The dark overlord knows this. I'll call him that. So he will attack the family, the mother and the child through the weak spots, which will be the temptation for the autistic child. It will be through symptoms that then get so overwhelming that moms can't even muster up the energy to change the diet, it would be through social pressure and guilt and shame and accusation. So you might hear yourself think, oh, it's such a shame my child can't have what other children can have, and it can't be that bad, and I don't want to take away his pleasures and the few things in life that he enjoys. Oh, I don't want my child, you shouldn't let your child be different and weird, just let them be part of the peer group. They're already different. Should they also then be different when it comes to what type of cakes they eat? Oh no. All these lies and accusations that install fear and guilt and apathy and lack of action and lack of boundaries and lack of health, and just tricks us into follow the masses, eating what they all eat, follow the matrix of food, mainstream food, big tech, big media, big food, toxic foods that break down the body slowly, like I just explained gluten does, and then turning it into this huge thing that we all need in order to socialize and feel fulfilled and have the cakes, and then accept the bodies when they completely fall apart because of inflammation and food reactions and immune reactions and gut disruption or destruction. So it is all linked, the pride movement, the autism symptoms, the autism acceptance movement, when it turns autism into an ideology where we have to accept status quo and we just have to fit into this group of people who have a certain behavior, and there's nothing we can do about this, and we should be proud about this. And the whole destructive food matrix that is selling us addictive and stimulating foods, that the body is this, as soon as it's installed into the system, the body will force you to go and eat it again so that you can destroy your healing purpose and healing path, destroy your health, destroy the ability to live the life that's been designed for you. And so temptations, addictions, stimulants, there will be attacks on your child that will be directed or designed to break you down and give you lack of hope and a lack of results, so that you give up on the healing and so that you give up on the turnaround process, or so that you give up on the plan that God has for you to live a life in peace and health and harmony and in nature, and contributing and helping other people heal as well. So just really consider that you need to be undercover and protection. And right now, me and my family, we are being led out of Egypt. I really feel this is a Moses moment. If any of you have read the Bible, Moses took God's people out of slavery in Egypt. And when you're taken into the promised land, we are leaving England, which is a country we came to because of a clairvoyant telling me that I had to go and live with my so-called twin flame soulmate in an ungodly relationship. And so many things I lost along the way: my home country, my house, my old business, my health, my breast. I had cancer. I stopped working and I started working for him instead, and I felt like I owed him that because he was providing for me and my kids, and all kinds of things. It was just loss upon loss, and I got weaker and weaker every single year. And so we are being taken away from the place we came to from bad direction, and it will happen to you as well when you are being taken into the promised land, which is recovery, which is we are going to live in nature in a tiny home and in an apartment very close to it while we are renovating the tiny home and creating a swimming lake and outdoor saunas and off-grid cabin and solar power and all those things. We are going to show moms that that's how you can live your life as well. You don't have to be a slave to the system or to the diagnoses or to the electrical grid or to politicians or to greedy business moguls, mastodons. And so when we're doing that, we are a threat because we will bring people with us. Like we brought people to God when we left the New Age spirituality. There's a lot of punishment from the dark side from what we did there and how many people have left New Age spirituality through that with us. So there's a lot of spiritual attacks and they're going for the weakest links and the enemy will go for temptations and addictions and try to make it irresistible to destroy our journey. And so as I'm recording this, I'm in my home in England for the last time recording a podcast. And it's complete chaos that we have no heating. For some reason, it's just stopped working, moving boxes everywhere. And we have attack upon attack upon attack. If it's not a card that is not working, like a bank card that's being blocked because someone's trying to fraud me from money online. If it's not that, it's our pet's passport that wasn't working, so we had to go back and do that all over again. And if that's not a problem, then it's my business account that is just practical nightmare and stress and attacks all the time. Because the enemy wants you defeated. The enemy wants you to lose hope. The enemy wants you sick and destroyed and anxious and tired and exhausted and overwhelmed. So I'm woken up in my sleep at night at the moment. And I cannot sleep that long. And I don't feel that I can really think. And I don't feel that I can create the information and the content that I'm used to creating, because I'm just completely full. My brain is full, my mind is full, my house is full. And they say that moving is almost as traumatic as serious injuries or being chronically ill. That's how much stress it's putting on the system. So any other stress factor is like almost pushing us over the edge. For example, I'm not able to exercise at the moment because I'm already so stressed about the moving. So I constantly have to lean into God and letting Him guide me. And I know He's always providing for us. He's always making sure we have food, roof over our heads. And as long as we stick to our Bible and our prayer and stay on the narrow path, He will get us there. But just like when Moses took his people out of slavery into the promised land, they complained and they had all kinds of issues and challenges. Like literally they had to part, God had to part the ocean to get them safe to the other side and away from Pharaoh's evil soldiers. And when you're escaping autism and you're escaping the matrix, you're escaping the autism matrix, you're escaping the functional medicine matrix, you're escaping the biomed matrix. I'll link to all the podcasts I've done about these, all these matrices that are here to destroy and destruct your healing process and your child and your family. So when you're leaving slavery of autism, including the symptoms, the enemy will try to hunt you down. You have to not complain. You have to stay in faith and know that as long as you walk the narrow path where you choose based on truth and honesty and purity and innocence and forgiveness, which is why I'm making this podcast, because I could also pretend that this is not something we're struggling with, but then I would not be honest. I wouldn't be truthful. I wouldn't be innocent and I wouldn't be pure in my communication. If I don't share the things that we are still struggling with based on spiritual attacks, based on bad choices that I made earlier in life, and based on just the tests that God is taking us through at the moment. And my final tips for you who are either struggling with removing gluten from your diet, or you're struggling with severe symptoms in your child, or you're struggling with getting your child to eat healthy is, one, understand that this is a spiritual warfare and you won't be able to solve this on your own. We have to involve God and we have to understand that this is a supernatural war and that you need to come undercover. Two, you will always have lessons in these issues that has to do with your child's issues that has to do with what you're doing yourself. One of my addictions are overperforming and overworking and overpleasing and having this feeling that if I'm not there for everybody all the time and I'm not showing up on Instagram and Facebook and newsletters and podcasts and producing content all the time, then I'm not worthy. That's my stress and trauma response. And whenever I do that, whenever I'm stepping out of integrity, and I do that instead of leaning into God, because God does not want us to be so busy that we are not enjoying what we have created by following his instructions. So that's an addiction that I've had. I've had an addiction to being rigid with my food myself over the past year, at least probably 2 years. Especially after recovering from or understanding that my relationship was fake. I've done a lot of fasting. I've done a lot of over-exercising. I have done a lot of restriction when it comes to carbs and bread and fruit out of fear and rigidity. And within the last 6 months, I started tracking my metabolism and I started tracking my, because I thought after cancer, what I learned was that you needed to fast really long fasting windows and you needed to go low carb, very low carb, actually low meat and low fat as well to starve the cancer. And that turned into a real food fear for me. And so when I started monitoring what type of stress that caused my nervous system, because you can actually monitor that and how it had damaged my metabolism. And then I started eating more carbs, exercising less, resting more. Those addictions were something that I had to face as well. And I'm going to talk about in an upcoming podcast how rigidity and extremity and severe exclusion diets, both from an emotional, from a spiritual and a practical point of view and a biological point of view, is damaging to autism families, autism moms and our bodies and our child's healing process. So that's coming up in a podcast very soon or a YouTube blog video. But just know that these children always express a blind spot, an area in our lives that we haven't fully healed yet and that we still need to work on. And we all always have work to do. We all always have work to do. And so I am currently working on... So I thought I could still keep on exercising pretty much a lot. And I've just realized with this move where I'm being taken out of slavery, this Moses moment, that I cannot be exercising the way that I used to exercise. And you cannot either. So if you are stressed and exhausted because of autism symptoms in your life and in your child, if you are stressed because you're moving or because your child is keeping you up at night, and if you're stressed because you're not eating enough food, and with eating enough food, that really includes carbs, gluten-free bread, rice, fruit, quinoa, the things that you might have avoided, tropical fruits, whatever you're afraid of, oats, whatever you're rigidly cutting out of your diet. If you are excluding that, your body is under stress because it won't be able to get the right type of nutrition into the cells. And if we're not resting, if we're not eating enough, and if we have stress in our lives already, which I have now because of the breakup, because of the aftermath of cancer, and because I'm moving country, I'm finally coming home. and that you might have because your child is still in active autism symptoms, then you need to eat more and exercise less, or exercise wisely in tiny increments. Because if you add more stress into the mix, you will break down the body and the metabolism and your nervous system. And I can feel that this move is almost to the max with what I can cope with. I cannot do much more. And that is what God will do. He will take you to the end of your tether. He will take you to that point where you're thinking, I can't do this and I can't do anymore. And I have used up all my energy and my opportunities and my possibilities. I'm done. That situation, you will be brought to your knees so many times during the autism recovery process. When we talk about dark valleys, these dark valleys that we are taken through as we recover autism year by year, decade by decade, we are always taken through dark valleys when we need to build more character, when we need to get our lives right, when we need to walk even more in integrity. And nobody will ever get done when it comes to that work. So I'm sharing this so that you can know that I also sometimes struggle, and I also sometimes feel completely overwhelmed. And I also sometimes really regret decisions that I made. And I also sometimes feel a bit claustrophobic about the responsibility of still having to monitor certain things in my son's life. But going from full-time caregiver, not being able to take my eyes off my child because he would then be in danger or jumping into a pool, or knowing that he couldn't complete an education, or he couldn't have friends, or he couldn't have work, looking into the future with that perspective, and then looking at the situation that God has blessed me with now, where he is independent, where he does work, he can manage his own work, he makes his own food, he doesn't drink, he exercises, he's an incredible soul, he's got his musical career, and he wants to take an education in that field as well. Massive blessing there. But that doesn't mean that, okay, then I'm done, and then I don't have things to learn. From my cancer recovery process, my many years of fasting and exercising a lot and not eating enough carbs, basically, I still need to gain more weight. I was so frail in the end after having been really fat in my past and struggling with yo-yo weight in my younger years. I was so frail after cancer, and my body was so used to operate at a minimum when it came to input, when it came to carbs and carb burning and the ability to actually burn carbs, that I had to start all over very recently. And that's why I'm eating much more starchy vegetables and fruit and carbs and porridge and muesli. And I have some really great refuel days that are even more intense than the ones I used to teach. So that's so awesome. And I have to gain more weight and more muscle for this phase of my life. And I've been too skinny when I was recovering from cancer. And so now I'm moving back into a stronger body with more muscle mass on my frame, and that requires more food and probably more weight gain than I have currently accomplished. And I will be taking you through that journey as well. So if you struggle with not finding the right reasons why you should remove gluten, I can tell you the sooner you do this, the easier it's going to be. The more years your child will have with gluten in the system, the harder it's going to be. So take control all the way throughout the years where you have the authority over the financial situations, the bank cards. Don't invest in things that destroy your child's brain and body. And know that you will be dealing with the same things that I'm dealing with, but the sooner you start, the less the challenges with this will be. You don't want to be having to deal with this plus stimming, plus eloping, plus nonverbal autism, plus aggression, plus risky behavior, plus junk food, plus poor health because the child is not eating healthy foods, plus the temptation of alcohol that might happen if you don't set clear boundaries in the younger years and in the teenage years. So this is my little rant about gluten, and I pray that the journey without gluten may be smooth for you, and you can find a lot of inspiration and motivation at my website barefootautismwarriors.com under free resources. You can also contact me, send me an email. The description for this podcast is at barefootautismwarriors.com/podcasts, and you can always email me at contact@barefootautismwarriors.com. I am opening up coaching group for moms who want to turn as many symptoms around as possible in the shortest amount of time while getting stronger and healthier than you have ever been yourself. So send me an email if you want to talk to me about a strategy for your child. And if you liked this podcast, I would love it if you gave it some stars and shared it with your friends, or shared it on Instagram and sent me your input on Instagram or via Facebook or via my website. So do check out barefootautismwarriors.com or the Facebook group Barefoot Autism Warriors, or me on Instagram, Ninka Bernadette Marwitson. I am very good at answering questions in there if you have any, and connecting with you there. So let's get the conversation going, and thank you for being in my life. So as a little bonus to this podcast, of course it's challenging for all of us in the family, and particularly for my son, but he's agreed to say a couple of words about his experience with this. How does he feel when he is not eating this? What type of personality does he have? What makes him do it? I don't know what. Actually, we haven't prepared anything, so I don't know exactly what he wants to say. So I just wanted his voice to be heard as well, because it's a massive sacrifice for him to be public about these things that are so difficult. So for those of you who are listening, I pray that you may receive him from your heart to his heart and hear him out, and that his message will be received, and that he will bring you hope and bring you insights as well.
Yes, so this is Ninka's son, and I would just like to tell you how it feels for me when I make the decision to eat something that I shouldn't, and I have experienced that I lose the relationship with my family, and it's hard for us to communicate because the brain shuts down and it gets confused, so you don't make the same decisions when you eat normal food. So it's hard for you to keep the relationship with your family, for me, if I keep eating what I'm doing. So when before I think the decision of eating the bad food, I go into the shop and I look at it and I think, oh, this is something interesting, because what you eat at home is not the same, and you want to try something new, but it's actually bad for you. It's so easy to go in the shop and then buy something that is not good for you. And the second that you have it, you regret it because you know how bad it is for you. So when it comes to the thing when you go to the store and you buy something that you shouldn't, my family always ask me, why don't you eat what we have at home, because it's better for you, what they say to me. And I sometimes you eat the same thing at home every day, and your brain thinks when you're in the store, oh, you want to try something new, and then you just have to try it. And the second you after you tried it, you feel bad and you regret it, and it's not good for your, like, it's not good for your brain or for anything else in your body. I can't really explain why I must go to the store and buy that thing, but I can say to you that the second that I have it, it makes me feel bad in the stomach, and even if I eat dairy, I get sick, and I can't concentrate on anything like that, and I get angry, and I let it out on my family, and then they get scared. But it's not. I'm not trying to get so angry at my family. It's just how I react to the food. My goals to my decision is to stay together with my family and let them help me to make better decisions. And I also want to make better choices in what I'm eating, and I want to stay healthy, and I want to get prepared for music conservatory, and I want to build a better relationship with my family. Like that's my goal, and I hope this message brings hope to families and make them keep fighting for their children. And yeah, I'm just and thank you for listening to this podcast. Goodbye.